Right, well, I want to begin by having us think a little bit about two of the more interesting chapters in the New Testament. That's Revelation 4 and 5, where all the nations are gathered around singing praises to our God and lifting up the name of God and what God has done through Jesus Christ. If there's any place where we should appreciate the value of diversity, it should be in the church. And so what we want to do is we want to talk about Dallas and community, but community at Dallas is complicated. I like to say there are 3.5 discussions that go on. One is the discussion that happens with the African-American community. The other is the discussion that happens with those who are first, second, or third generation, whatever ethnicity slash American who are here. The fourth is a discussion with internationals, and you wrap male and females around that. I'm counting that as 0.5. That's probably a bad way to numericize it. But anyway, that's the 3.5 discussions that we have. And there's no good way to talk about diversity without being aware of that difference on the one hand, and yet at the same time recognizing you can probably only have one conversation at a time. And so what we have decided to do with this community in DTS Chapel, which is kind of a new category for chapel conversations, this is not a table or CE chapel, is to focus on our international students. One of the things that makes cross-cultural communication awkward is it's awkward. And sometimes, even unaware, we hesitate to step in because we have a feeling within us that unawares, we know we're traveling into territory we might not be used to traveling into. And it creates a dual awkwardness. So what we wanted to do was to put together a panel, kind of talk our way through this as a way of thinking through how we interact with our international community on campus. I'm going to let everyone introduce themselves first, and then we're going to just kind of dive in. I'm going to surface some awkward things that happen that perhaps some of us aren't aware of, and we're going to have a conversation. Then we're going to close our time. Dr. Orr is going to close our time by having us pray together for the relationships that we have across community on campus. So, Tim, why don't you start us? Introduce yourself to begin, and we'll just go down the row here.
I'm Timothy from India, and I'm doing my STM here.
Hi, I'm Annalisa Vargas. I'm from Chihuahua, Mexico, and I'm doing my THM.
I'm Michael Ortiz, and my parents are from Cuba. Does that count?
Yeah, it counts.
And teach here, work here at the seminary.
Hi, I'm Sam Lee. So I actually was born here in Dallas and grew up here, but before I was born, my family is from Taiwan. So, but I'm actually not an international student, but my original family is from Taiwan.
Hi, my name is Joseph Lee. I'm real Korean. I'm finishing up my THM.
Marc-Henri Caron from Quebec, Canada. That makes me not American. and not just regular Canadian as well. I'm a last semester THM student, and we'll go back to Quebec.
Hi, my name's Rodney Orr, and I'm a professor here at Dallas Seminary.
All right, well, let's dive in here. Tim, I get emails from India, and when they're listed, sometimes I can't tell the first name from the last name. So I don't know what to call someone when I write them back, okay? So can you help me?
Yeah. When I first came to US, people asked me about, what is your first name? In India, we don't go by first name or last name, but we go by surname, which is the family name, and then given name. So that's how we address it. Okay. And after coming here, when people asked me your first name, I would have said Timothy once, and sometime else I would have said Mutiala, because I don't know what exactly is the first name I should be mentioning. Yeah. But later, this was like everywhere. You go to Luke's, you go to some administrative office, everywhere people are asking me for the first name. So I was like, okay, let me sort it out. Then I understood the first name is the given name.
Mm-hmm.
So given name is called as first name here. So usually if you want to address an Indian, if you meet them and ask them their name, if they just say that, who are you, then if they answered a name, if you ask me what is your name, I would usually say Tim.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the name I would prefer to be called. So it's good if you just...
But an email, it might show up in the reverse order,
oh,
correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really confusing to me.
That's true. So, yeah, so usually the first name would be a little easy to pronounce or mm-hmm. easy to understand, and that's the name usually people call people. Uh-huh. So that's the given name
so
of an
Tim
Indian.
So Tim is easy.
Yes.
But the last name you have, or your surname is?
Yeah, Mutyala. So which would be a little...
Difficult. I have no chance.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It'll take a little time.
Okay, that's right. Okay, thanks, Tim. Now, we were talking about this as a group before we were meeting. In the midst of having this conversation about names, Samuel had an observation about names in China that I want to share with everyone. This is fascinating.
Yeah, so my last name is Lee, but in Chinese, they actually say the last name first. So my Chinese name is Li Guangluan, and your last name goes first. And one thing in Chinese culture is usually husbands and wives, the wives won't change their last names to their husband. They'll just keep their original name. And I know in America, in Western culture, it's very common. But one thing that happened is, so my wife, Febrina, she's back there. She's from Indonesia, and in Indonesian culture, she's the same. And her mom and dad have different last names. And actually, her brother has different last names than her. So when I first met her family, it was kind of confusing for me a little. But once I figured out, one thing that we realized, we got married last summer, and over here on our wedding program, we put her parents' name, right? And they had different last names. And people would tell us, oh, you shouldn't put different last names for her parents because then everyone's gonna think her parents are divorced. Because over here, parents didn't have the same last name. But what happened was just over Christmas break, we went back to Indonesia to do a wedding reception there. And in English, my parents have the same last name. And over there, they said, oh, you shouldn't put their parents the same last name or else they're going to think they're related. Okay. So you realize, like, just with last names, different cultures perceiving different things. Over here, oh, it needs to be the same. Over there, it needs to be different. And it's just these little cultural things, even for me, I would, like, never thought of. And one other thing is I've heard people say before, like, oh, the wife needs to change the last name after they get married because it's, like, submissive to their husbands, and if they don't, it's not good. But one thing I think Dr. Orr really taught us in our cultural class, too, is realizing what some things are more right and wrong, but some things are more cultural. So for instance, in Asian culture, when the wife doesn't change the last name, it's not like a sign of disrespect or anything. It's just, that's just the culture, and it's not even like really something they really think about. So one thing is being more sensitive to realizing, okay, maybe in my culture, this is what people do, but that's not what's expected always in other cultures.
Okay, well, that's kind of a introduction of some of the things. I mean, something as simple as names that produce a sense of awkwardness. Now, Ana Lisa, the way this works in Latin American culture as well. So how to explain that to us?
So for instance, in Latin America, the two last names, so my father's last name and my mom's last name, I carry them. So I'm Ana Lisa Vargas Loya. And here they tell me, oh, you're Ana Lisa Vargas. And I'm like, no, Ana Lisa Vargas Loya. You're missing the last one. And so, and kind of like what Samuel said, now that I'm right now engaged, woo.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. In Mexico, we don't change our last name, so I wouldn't be Ana Lisa Ross. I will be forever Ana Lisa Vargas, because socially you could be Mrs. Ross, but forever it would be Ana Lisa Vargas. And so it's not a sign of being like rebellious or something. It's what we do in Latin America.
So these are customs that it's I call it the rules people play by. Okay, different rules. It's a different game, okay? Well, it's the same game, but different rules. And so you end up with differences. And these little things can get in the way of what's going on. Marc Andre and I did that with a Texas accent, so I don't have that Quebecan thing going on, okay? Talk a little bit about what it's like for an international student to come into our culture and to overhear conversations in which you have no clue what's being talked about because culturally there's stuff going on.
Well, one thing that was very interesting for me was coming to Texas and inserting myself in a discussion about the experience of African American, in which in Canada we don't have a history of slavery. Our racism is more directed toward our First Nation, sadly. So I really had no context in which I could understand the recrimination or the demands of our African American brothers and sisters. And so as I was trying to understand what's my place and what am I to say or react or how should I listen, it just was a very very confusing thing, because you're basically this, it's assumed that I have a part to play in this, and yet I really have no clue where I am. So as you can hear me, I'm pretty confused about the subject right now. But basically, it looks like I have that I'm American, but in fact I'm not. So it's hard to position yourself, or should I even have a position?
So what advice would you give to someone, particularly when they're interacting with our internationals on campus and they start to dive into a particularly culturally focused discussion? Would it help you to be given some background or something like that? What would be the way in to include you in that conversation rather than have you feel like just a bystander in some way?
Well, what was helpful for me was to not be shy about who I am, and so whenever I would present myself, I would make a point of pronouncing my last name in a way that people would clearly understand that English is not my first language, that I am not American. And so just by, even though it takes 10 seconds then to explain how you as an American can pronounce it, then it made a statement that you shouldn't expect that I understand exactly what it is to be an American. So owning my own identity by a simple declaration like that was helpful for me, because then it allowed people to understand, well, okay, he probably needs to be filled in on a few things. And then a second thing would be to never presume anything about someone else's culture. Oh, Canadians are like that. No one likes labels, and it goes for any culture, any ethnic background.
And Joseph, talk a little bit about your experience here. You, when we met before, shared a little bit about your observations about a Korean context in the United States. Share a little bit about what that's like for you and what your experience here has been.
Well, I moved here when I was 15, so, and I spend time in, here in about 13 years now, so I think I have about like half of my experience in Korea and half of my experience in U.S. So I'm kind of in mixed in some sense.
And they call them hybrids sometimes.
But then my Korean culture is deeply rooted in myself, that whenever one of our culture, the strong one, is the shame and honor culture. And whenever I try to chip in to just have a conversation or discussion in classroom or even like stuff like this, like I'm very, very concerned, oh, am I going to ruin my people's reputation? Mm-hmm. Am I going to ruin my parents' reputation? When I was young, my mom would always tell me, you know, if you do wrong at school, your teacher is not disciplining really you. They're saying bad stuff on us. So don't ever do anything wrong. And that is just so rooted in me that I think whenever I just have anything to say or just contribute, it's really difficult for me to step in. I think that was kind of a big obstacle for me to kind of adapt into American culture.
Okay, I'm going to pull the faculty into this a little bit. Rodney, as you teach cross-cultural studies and you think about kind of some of the issues that we're surfacing here, that kind of thing, what one or two things would you say to us with expertise in that area about how to negotiate into this space? It will always feel a little awkward. Mm-hmm. So that part's okay. How do you get beyond the awkwardness?
Yeah. Well, you have to get used to being a little uncomfortable. I tell my students, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's part of it. We in America are a justice guilt culture. You heard Joseph talk about shame honor. Well, we are a justice guilt culture. And we just have to understand who we are, because that's the first step in being in cross-cultural ministry, is to understand who you are and try not to push who you are onto other people and to let them be who they are and to understand that it's not bad, it's just different. And that's something that we like to teach.
And Miguel, you've negotiated particularly Hispanic culture and American culture, which is in some ways becoming another important conversation, particularly in an North American context. What advice would you have for us in terms of thinking about the cross-cultural experience?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the Hispanic culture is not monocultural. Mm-hmm. We need to keep that in mind, first of all. Just like I think African American and other cultures are not monocultural. There are diversities within those cultures, and the same thing applies to the Hispanic culture. So when you interact with a Hispanic, perhaps here in Dallas, that interaction might be very different than it might take place in Los Angeles or even Miami, for instance, or even Houston, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So I think the part of it is just trying to be sensitive of where you are and be patient, ask good questions, and don't feel like you need to learn everything on the first time either. You know? And so that means that if you want to cross that cultural barrier and get to know a Hispanic, some simple questions like, let's talk about your family. Tell me about your family. Because for the Hispanic culture, that is extremely important. In fact, when I travel overseas to Latin American countries, most down there have never met my family, yet when I first meet them, they ask me, how is your family? Tell me about your family. And so that's a really great segue into the Hispanic culture, is let's talk about your family.
I remember we've done a podcast with Hispanic leaders, and I asked them, tell us one thing about your culture that someone like me would need to understand. And the response about blew me away. He said, throw away your watch. So before I get rid of my iWatch here, Ana Elisa, tell us what's behind that? What's going on in talking about that? What's particular about Hispanic culture that's a little different that might catch someone off who might not understand Hispanic culture?
Yeah, I think that Hispanics, Latins, value a lot community, but not just community, but deep community. Here in the States, people value more time than people. They are driven by events. And for instance, here at DTS, we have a lot of events, and we are a community that share the same religious interest or other characteristics, but is it deep? And so are we getting to know each other and caring for each other? Are we just asking, how are you, because we have to? And so one of the characteristics of the Hispanics is that we even joke between Hispanics that you meet a person and 5 minutes after, you know, that the grandmother plays poker on Wednesdays. And then that, I mean, you know all about the family, and it's just, it becomes very personal. And sometimes I feel that Americans feel very uncomfortable of sharing personal stuff, but get out of your comfort zone and share and have deep relationships. We are a community, but is it deep?
And you have to be careful with the question, how are you? Because it might turn into a half-hour conversation, right?
Yeah.
So, because we use how are you casually and as a way of greeting each other, right? But in the Latin Hispanic culture, the how are you question is intended to really ask, how are you? And it leads to a conversation.
Yeah, the same's true in Germany. We lived in Germany, and I used to have just offhandedly say, wie geht's, which is, how, you know, how are you in German? And the moment you asked that question, you didn't do it walking past one another so that someone would say, fine. If you asked wie geht's in German, the person stopped, okay, and began to talk about where they were. So it's amazing, all these little, many of them are things we don't even think about, that we just go through and we don't even think about how someone is processing that question in a completely different way with a completely different intent than perhaps what it's asked to be. What I wanna do is I'll kinda wanna do with the rest of you what I did with Annalisa, and that is, tell us a feature of your culture that you think, one, it's helpful to be for others to be aware of, and two, that you think is a value that gives that's something precious about your culture that's worth knowing. Kim?
I think there are several similarities between Latin culture and Indian culture, where families are given highest importance, and we live with the parents for a long time, and I think that that is very precious from our culture, and also kind of giving more importance to the community living wherever you are, and trying to get into the conversation with the friend you meet rather than just saying hello and walking past. Yeah, these are the things I think Indians are special at in a way. Mm-hmm. And initially I found it difficult to hold a conversation when I reached US. Mm-hmm. Because people would just ask random questions and they would just move on. Mm-hmm. And in some conversations I would not understand certain things because of the American idiom they use, mm-hmm. or jokes they use, or now I'm a little bit comfortable. At least I can think that, okay, it might be from a movie or a or a novel or a TV show. But
that's right.
Initially,
it's not reality. That's good. Yeah.
So initially, I found it very difficult to understand the conversation. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So as the time progressed, I think it took little time to understand what's happening and. I think it's better now, yeah.
Samuel?
Real quick, on the how are you theme too, uh-huh. So I'm American, I grew up here, so I understand like when you say how are you, you say fine, but I've actually had more than one Chinese international student come up to me in their first semester here and be like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong because people say how are you, or I say how are you to them, and then they keep walking. And it's like, am I offending people in some way? Hmm. And I had to explain to them, oh no, that's just basically like a polite saying hi. So yeah, again, little things like this. I think one thing with Chinese culture, I think actually Chinese culture is very similar to probably Indian and Hispanics and more event-oriented, more communal. I think one thing you'll find as you learn more about cultures is there's like, I think American culture is just really different than the rest of the world. So like I think if you look at Hispanic or even Asian culture, it's a lot more just relationship-based. But one thing, especially I know Chinese culture we love is we love food. Okay, yeah. So, and I think one of the best ways to get to know any culture is try their food, go eat with someone of the culture, and I think you can learn a lot. I help a lot with the Chinese Student Fellowship here on campus, led by Dr. Xie, and you'll realize if you ever see us in an event, in my 3 years here, we've never had an event where we don't have food, okay? And that's just part of the culture. It's just when you meet together, you eat together. So I think one thing, this isn't just for Chinese, but just for all cultures, is if you can just share a meal.
Feed the hungry, right?
Yeah. And you can maybe even with international students, you can share, okay, this is kind of what we eat, but let me kind of see what you eat. And I think that's sometimes can bridge the awkwardness too, because when you're eating, it kind of conversation just comes up. So that's one thing I think would be good.
Joseph?
And I want to add on that too. And it's the best way really, if you want to get to know a person, if you just try to go with them, try their cultural food. I think it's really, Asian culture is rooted in with fellowship with food. There will be always food when there's event. After the event, there will be always food. And if you want to get to know that person, I think it's the best ways to try their food and just eat with them and try to know their culture through. I think that would be the really good starting point. I just want to, yeah.
Marc Andre.
The story of Quebecers in North America is one of a small remnant of French speaking in a sea of English speaking people. And up until the 60s, we were kind of controlled by the small British minorities in Quebec, and so. It took a while for Quebecers to understand that they could be masters in their own home with their own language and owning their own culture. And so that makes us nowadays, where we're where we're controlling our own province, proud of who we are, because for 350 years in North America, we were controlled by another ethnic group. But it also gives us a posture of, okay, well, though we're small in a sea of otherness, we need to be proud of who we are, but also be able to accommodate others whom we trade with, whom we visit on business occasion. And it goes with, okay, am I being able to stand who I am with my language and my particular political ideas? But as I relate with people who are very different than me, so balancing this, I own who I am, and yet I'm able to enter in relationship with someone who's really different than me, but who may not look different.
You know, when you're in cross-cultural situations, you have to watch what people are doing with their hands and their feet, because that can give you a lot of nonverbal cues. In class yesterday, one of the students was saying he went home and he did this, and everybody came towards him. But when he does this here, everybody goes away. And you have to learn what these hand motions mean when you're in different situations.
Yeah, and obviously in a chapel and a panel like this, we're only starting to have these conversations. But I actually think one of the ways in is to ask people about their culture. To let them talk about who they are, where they come from, in some cases, why they do things the way that they do that are different, that kind of thing. When we were, I know what it is to live as a minority, non-primary language speaking person. We lived 4 years in Germany. German is not our first language. It never will be. It's an impossible language to learn as a first language unless you were born there. And so, I've been in a PTA meeting where I'm struggling to understand what's being said about my kids in the classroom, while at the same time trying to understand what other people are saying about their kids in the classroom who are able to communicate completely clearly. I know what I would love to say, but I know what I'm not able to say because I can't speak the language with that kind of facility, that kind of thing. I know what that kind of experience is, and it's hard, it's isolating to a certain degree. It is extremely awkward in that regard. And I found the best way to kind of figure out the rules of the game were to ask people what the rules of the game were. I had no idea, if those of you who are from Europe will understand this, I had no idea how important a stempel was. A stempel's a stamp, okay? It goes on any piece of paper that means anything in Europe. You cannot get from point A to point B without having the piece of paper, the exact piece of paper that you need, stamped with the almighty stempel. And so, and what's interesting is the culture is loaded with jokes about bureaucrats as a result, okay? Sometimes the humor is a way into understanding what the culture is about and that kind of thing. So we've just kind of, you know, cracked the ice in terms of thinking about how to interact with international students. You know, in the few minutes you have before class or after class, because everybody is busy in our world, taking a few minutes to speak to the person next to you and ask them a little bit about where they're from or what they're about, and the ability to do that in class after class along the way might be a road to building relationships. I think you have a rare opportunity here at the seminary to experience the body of Christ worldwide. This place is different than most places, in many places you'll walk into, where you can actually ask what Christianity is like in a different context, and in a different setting, and with different values and with different rules. And there's a lot to be learned and an opportunity. There won't be a class on this, okay? But it could be one of the most valuable things you get out of your seminary experience.